From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Crawl. We're playing this week with Dr. Dave David, Sir Peter Panique, and Chris Topher. And here again is your host at the University of Texas at Austin, Angelo Avedon.
Thank you, Crawl. Thank you, everybody. It is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Team Polygraph, thank you. Welcome. How's the, and where are y'all from?
We're from Texas.
Texas. And how's the Lone Star State on this fine autumn day?
Windy. Very windy today.
Is it true that all Texans take football more seriously than politics, religion, and apple pie?
Well, let's just say there's only two sports in Texas, football and spring football.
So if Jerry Jones ran for public office, he would be a wide receiver of Texan support.
Well, for certain, he would need to deliver an impenetrable defensive line or his opposing candidates might score more votes.
I'm not sure we have enough time to tackle this issue.
Well, I'll tell you, it would be exciting to sit back and watch that action. Team Polygraph, welcome to the show. You are going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Crawl, what is Team Polygraph's topic?
I would deny it, but technology has proven me wrong.
Well, clearly all things are impacted by technological innovations. Technology blurs the lines of national identity and forces change in even the most inadaptable industries. It is not hard to imagine technology taking us beyond the borders of what we know today. Our panelists are going to tell you three surprising stories about technology-driven events. Only one of these is true and was recently featured as a press release from www.ed.gov, a news release from NPR, or a blog post from www.edutopia.org. Choose the true story and you will win a dinner date with Crawl. Ready to play?
Ready.
Excellent. Let's go. First up, we will hear from Dr. Dave David.
The importance of early literacy and numeracy skills cannot be argued, nor can the rapidly increasing use of technology among young people. In addition, statistics indicate that less than 1% of American 2-year-olds can successfully complete basic algebra equations. U.S. Secretary of Education Arnie Duncan is poised to correct this problem and has awarded 3 grants totaling $27 million to improve the algebra skills among 2- through 8-year-olds. Duncan states, the grants will surround young children with a variety of innovative media. News sources are looking into the rumor that Apple will soon be releasing an iPhone app that will help 2-year-olds manage potty training, temper tantrums, and math exercises.
All right, from Dr. David, Advanced Algebra for 2-year-olds. Your next story about technology-driven events comes from Sir Peter Panique.
Earlier this week, China's National Supercomputing Center unveiled the world's biggest, fastest supercomputer. This new technical marvel has many in the technology community buzzing about the implications of its development. Eric Schmidt, CEO of Google, announced that a team of developers and engineers would begin working on a supercomputer to rival the one in China. In an interview, Schmidt stated, "The goal is not only to enable faster Google search results, but also to improve prediction capabilities of Google searches to return more relevant results. Once completed, the supercomputer would be called a heuristically programmed algorithmic computer, or HAL for short."
Okay, Google versus China. Thank you, Sir Panique. Finally, your last story, a shockingly non-boring one concerning technology-driven events, comes from Chris Topher.
A class project designed by a high school teacher in rural Arkansas continues the national debate about the appropriate role of technology in education. Science teacher Stan McCabe, in a unique bid to teach his students about global positioning systems, attempted to have his class caught by Google Street View cameras. Based on a tip that Google cars would pass the school around 10:30 a.m. on October 27th, McCabe led his students outside to stand for several minutes on the street corner. McCabe has received praise from fellow teachers for his creativity in integrating technology with science. However, Susan Schneider, a University of Arkansas professor of law and parent of a student in McCabe's class, was upset by the activity. stating, "Notwithstanding the questions of liability, this lesson falls way short of the educational values parents expect. They might as well have been playing Frisbee with an iPad and calling it a technology lesson. If the class was actually photographed by Google Street Cams is yet unknown, and despite opposition, McCabe and his students hope to find that they were indeed caught."
So, while you can't yet vote Jerry Jones for president, Team Polygraph, you can vote on which story is factual. From Dr. Dave David, a story about a government initiative to increase the algebraic minds of two-year-olds using technology. From Sir Peter Panik, a story about an unlikely contender in China's race for technological supremacy, that is Google. And from Chris Topher, a story about the precise miscalculation of a high school teacher's bid to have his class caught by Google Street Cams. So, Team Polygraph, which of these is the true story?
With very little certainty, we are going to suggest that the Google versus China article is the one.
So you think Google can out-tech China by building a larger, faster, smarter mega computer?
I think they can do anything.
All right, well, to bring you the correct answer, straight from the source himself, who just last month uploaded a video response to YouTube about the issue.
So we're trying to step up in a big way through a variety of our grant competitions and in terms of our next year budgets to really better support the critically important work of getting our children's socialization and literacy skills intact before they enter kindergarten.
That was U.S. Secretary of Education Arne Duncan, who so eloquently stated that the true story is about the $27 million math initiative for two-year-olds. Unfortunately, Team Polygraph, you did not win, but you did earn a point for Sir Peter Panik for his engaging story of Google's upcoming supercomputer. Do y'all have anything to add to that?
Thank you so much.
We're ashamed.
Yeah.
We're ashamed.
Sorry.
$27 million to teach algebra to two-year-olds. Will wonders never cease? Team Polygraph, thank you so much for playing Bluff the Listener. Until next time, be sure to log into Wait, Wait, Don't Blog Me for updates about the show. Good night.
Hi, it's Rob Scordino here. Welcome to the Oddly Informative Tech Quiz. Today, we are logging into the world of learning technology. We're airing our special instructional technology, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, from the campus of the University of Texas. We're playing this week with our expert panel of Jeremy, Hema, and Margaret. All right, thank you all. It's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Looks like we have Group 1 on the line. Could you please introduce yourselves, Group 1, and tell us where you're calling from?
We like to call ourselves the Pink Elephants, actually.
Okay, and Pink Elephants, where are you from?
We are from the D.C. area.
D.C. area is probably pretty stressful in that area today, with all the whatnot going on.
It was very stressful, that's why we all left and came back.
That makes sense. All right, well, it's great to have you with us today. For the past 2 weeks, Group 1, or the Pink Elephants, whatever, has been following the technology section of Education Week from e-learning guru Susan Smith Nash's blog, E-Learning Queen, as well as technology consultant Jane Hart's blog, Jane's Pick of the Day. Good luck to you, Pink Elephants. Let's get started. Now you're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Reading, writing, and arithmetic have come a long way from the days of chalkboards, rulers, and pencils. Today's teachers and instructional designers are creating virtual learning worlds complete with chat rooms, video games, online learning adventures, social networking, and more. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories that may have you pining for the days of dusting erasers and broken pencils. These stories will illuminate the darker side of instructional technology. Ready to go? Let's first hear from Jeremy.
Well, thanks, Rob. I'm happy to be here. Do you ever feel like someone's watching you? Leave it to the home of the Texas Longhorns to treat students like cattle, literally. A couple of Texas school districts have come up with a plan that would make George Orwell turn backflips in his grave. using the same radio frequency identification technology devices used to track Bevo after he strayed from the herd, school officials have tagged all of their students with badges that track and pinpoint their exact location. The rationale is to increase security and safety. An advocate for the RF tracking device claims that by implementing the tracking devices, students could potentially be located in a fire. Moreover, it has been argued that the devices will increase attendance rates. Many in the community have raised red flags, citing that hackers could potentially steal the identities of the tagged students. Others, like the ACLU, have said the devices violate rights to privacy. At the end of the day, the traceable badges empower schools to increase attendance rates, which brings in more funding. Is it always about the money? At least they're not dusting off the branding iron.
Well, that's just a bunch of bull. Now with our second story, we have...
Thank you, Rob. Borrowing from the National Geographic Channel's Be the Preacher, sixth grade science teacher Jeff Miller fitted a tiny remote control webcam to one of the many schoolyard squirrels so that his students could be the creature, to see the animal's world from its own turf. The lesson was designed to understand habitat, foraging patterns, and potential predator risks. Miller's sixth grade class named the squirrel Zorro for his dexterity and limb jumping ability. Amidst a room of excited sixth graders, Miller turned on the screen and logged on to the Zorro cam for the class's first glimpse into the life of a squirrel from ground level. The screen came to life, and an image of road stripes and speeding car tires came into view. The squirrel Zorro ran toward the other side of the street. The last thing the sixth graders saw before Miller shut off the video was a car tire heading straight at the screen. Students ran to the window to look out at the street, and their worst fears were realized. The squirrel was lying dead on the street with the severely damaged webcam. The school authorities have had to pacify angry parents who believe the school acted irresponsibly in allowing Miller to expose their children to such an occurrence. When asked if he was disappointed in the outcome, Miller replied, "Actually, this was a great success. Students are excited about responsible urban development now, and the webcam showed the reality of what other creatures who share our world have to deal with on a daily basis."
All right, well, that was just nuts.
And now with our final story, we have Margaret.
Thanks, Rob. To address budget concerns, many schools are choosing to use Google's App Suite for Education. Contained within the suite are apps for organization, planning, collaboration, and instructing. Through Google Sites, schools are also able to create a more personal website. If your school decides to use Google for Education, make sure you take special care in choosing a domain name. Johnson High School in Massachusetts did not take this precaution. Typing johnsonschool.org will take you to the school's homepage. Typing johnsonschool.com, however, will bring you to a site that is quite a bit less tasteful. "What the heck kind of school is this?" asked concerned parent Judy Wassenberg when she mistakenly typed the letter of the two addresses. "I was looking for an email address to contact my son's teacher, but instead I get this spill." It seems that using the familiar .com suffix after Johnson School did not redirect you to the school's website, but rather to a website with explicit adult content. "This is going to be the best school year ever," exclaimed Sam, Judy's 16-year-old son, who had been with his mother as she searched for his teacher's contact information. Sam was, no doubt, disappointed the first day of class.
Right. Well, that was even more nuts than the last story.
That's awesome. So which of these stories is the real story of instructional technology gone awry? Jeremy's story of wrangling students. From Hema, we have Zorro the squirrel leaves his mark. And Margaret's story on the new take on sex ed. Which of these is the real story of techno troubles?
Can we see the Johnson.com site? It's radio.
That was good. That was good.
When elephants scare the squirrels.
I think in the third one.
So, are we all in agreement?
Which one?
Second one.
Second one it is.
We're going to go with Zorro the Squirrel and the webcam catastrophe story.
All right, well, to tell us the answer, we're going to go straight to the source.
There are real questions about the security risks involved with these gadgets. Readers can skim information. To the best of my knowledge, these things are not foolproof. We continually see cases where people are skimming, hacking, and stealing identities from sophisticated systems.
Sorry, you were incorrect. Jeremy had the right answer. Turns out, it wasn't a whole bunch of bull. According to Education Week, two Texas school districts implemented the radio frequency tracking of their students, mainly in the pursuit of increasing attendance in hopes of receiving more funding. The technology could have had unintended consequences, as you heard. The tags remind us of George Orwell's Big Brother, and they worry that hackers will find a way to track their students after they leave school. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for playing this edition of Bluff the Listener.
Welcome from Sanchez Building, Room 526 at the University of Texas in Austin. This is your host, Margie Brown.
Hi, this is the lightning round of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. I'm your host, Margie. Our panelists are Michelle, Grace, and Royce.
Hi.
Let's find out who our contestants are. Tell us your name and where you're from.
My name is Jeremy. I'm from Austin, Texas.
Well, how's the weather in Austin, Jeremy?
It is nice and windy and wonderful.
Windy and wonderful. Tell us your name and where you're from.
My name is Margaret, and I'm also from Austin.
Austin. How are the elections going down there in Austin, Texas?
We'll find out. I voted today, so we'll see.
And tell us your name and where you're from.
Hi, I'm Kima, and I'm from Austin as well, I guess.
You guess?
Yeah, I've been here for like 2 years, so yeah.
If you've been here for 2 years, then you're an Austinite. And tell us your name and where you're from.
I'm Rob, and like everybody else, I'm also from Austin.
Well,
Austin enough.
Austin enough.
Austin enough.
Well, we're glad all of y'all are here, and we're going to get started with our lightning round. Our contestants have been following three sources. They've been following Wes Fryer's Speed of Creativity blog, right?
Yes.
And y'all have also been following George Veliciano's Twitter, right? And you've also been following the Tech Biz section of Wired Magazine. Well, let's see if you discovered anything interesting. Each contestant is going to have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer is worth 2 points.
Oh.
Looks like everybody's tied for last place right now. Eva, you have 0 points. Jeremy, you have 0 points. Margaret, coming in at zero, and Rob ties it with zero. The clock starts when you begin the first question. Michelle, you're our first questioner, and Eva,
right,
you'll be our first contestant. Ready?
Oh, yeah.
Eye contact.
Yes.
Wes discusses Sprite Tad's blank as a variant of the story arc called the dramatic arc with 5 story parts: exposition, rising action, climax, falling action, and denouement.
And so could you repeat that?
Wes discusses Sprite Tad's blank as a variant of the story arc.
Pyramid.
Got it. The world's most successful robotics company is called?
iRobot.
What is the term used for the increasingly popular practice used by many groups of outsourcing tasks to the internet community? What is the term used for the increasingly popular practice used by many groups of outsourcing tasks to the internet community?
I give up.
This month, Wes has the students.
That last answer was crowdsourcing. Good job, Hema. Hema answered two questions for a total of 4 points. Grace, you're our next panelist questioner, and Jeremy, you're our next contestant. When you're ready, just push the button.
All right. Jeremy, you ready?
Yes.
Blank is a convention in Silicon Valley focused on stories of business venture failures.
Bill Kahn.
West shares an instance where students are using social media by Mediascripts.com as a blank clone.
YouTube.
In Who Ruled the Air in 1910, the writer compares the advertising campaign of this company in the early mid to mid 1900s to the current ad campaign of this company.
AT&T?
Mm-hmm.
And Verizon.
Both of these companies represent themselves as the essence of blank, of the people, by the people, for the people.
Democracy.
Grayson Chance is a 12-year-old from Edmonton, Oklahoma, who's 3.5 minutes of YouTube fame at a local church talent show singing a Lady Gaga song in April 2010 catapulted him to the blank.
Top.
Ellen Show. But good try.
And our time is up. A total of 4 questions right, and your total is 8 points. Jeremy is now in the lead with 8 points. Royce, you're going to be our next questioner, and Margaret is the next contestant, and after you set the timer, you may begin.
Okay, Margaret, you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. What recent mishap in Hungary gave environmentalists an alarm as Google satellites broadcast images of the event from above? AT&T attributed its success in avoiding government blank scrutiny, despite the monopoly it enjoyed, to its years of successful everyman advertising.
Dominance over
antitrust. In Hurley's presentation in Holland, Michigan, which Wes attended, Hurley said, "It is not important if something goes wrong. It is important how you..."
Fix it.
Oh, close. React.
I was guessing.
The MIT Media Lab focuses on making blank instead of prototypes that are only good for demonstrations.
Projects, right?
Functional devices.
Yay! Okay. Good. Time is up. Margaret, you answered a total of 1 question correct for 2 points. Grace, you're our final questioner, and Rob, you're our final contestant. Rob, you need eight to tie and 10 to win.
Uh-oh.
Are you ready?
As ready as I'm gonna be.
All right.
Here we go.
Okay.
Wes identified a favorite quote. Anyone can give an overview of a topic. Only a blank can deliver an in-depth exploration.
Expert.
The College of Education at the University of Texas at Austin recently hosted a summit with national leaders in education focused on doing what?
I should probably know this, right?
You can pass, it's okay.
I'm in the past, Jim.
The White House press secretary fielded the first ever question from blank in a press conference.
Twitter.
In the age of social media, it's important to blank with your audience by providing communication opportunities.
Make out.
Engage, I suppose.
Engaging.
The next media titans are Apple, blank, Facebook, and Amazon.
Google.
And that's time. Rob, with 3 correct answers for a total of 6 points. Royce, our winner is Jeremy with a total of 8. And Royce, what does our winner receive?
Our winner, Jeremy, receives this box of delicious gourmet chocolate cookies.
Thank you for joining us for Lightning Show tonight.
Woo! Thank you.
Hello from Studio 524 in the world-famous Sanchez Building. This is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the teaching and internet quiz show born from the critically acclaimed NPR Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me news quiz. I'm your host, Dan Gregory, and I'm joined by co-host Joanna Brooklyn and Jimmy Sun. Tonight's show promises to live up to other great spinoffs, including CSI Miami, Law & Order Los Angeles, and of course, Friends spinoff, Joey. Let's say hello to our contestants. Hello, contestants. What are your names and where are you from?
Hi, I'm Royce. I'm from Austin.
I'm Michelle. I'm from Austin as well.
Hi, I'm Margie. I'm from Battle Creek, Michigan.
I'm Grace, and I'm originally from the D.C. area.
Well, welcome to the show, contestants. It's time to play Bluff the Listener, a game in which contestants must try to tell truth from fiction. Woonhee, what's our topic for tonight's Bluff the Listener?
Our topic for tonight's quiz is the power of the internet. This power can be helpful and harmful, just like drinking a Red Bull to stay awake for an exam, finally not being able to get to sleep hours after the exam is done. So helpful and harmful.
Our panelists are going to tell you three stories about the power of the internet. This power can be helpful and harmful. Choose the true story, and you will win one of our great prizes. Tell them what they could win, Joanna.
Well, Dan, winning contestants will have their choice of one of three great prizes. Prize number one is the sultry voice of acclaimed IT scholar Dr. Joan Hughes on your home answering machine. Prize number two is a lifetime access to grouply.com, as long as it stays free. Prize number three is a custom-made instructional design tailored to you by next semester's Teaching and Learning with the Internet class on how to reset the clock in your car after daylight savings time, because really, who knows how to do that?
Sounds great, Joanna. All of our contestants have been briefed on the rules prior to coming to the show, so without further ado, contestants, are you ready to play?
Ready, absolutely.
Our first story comes to us from ecampusnews.com.
Higher education faculty and administrators got another lesson in the pitfalls of electronic communication and viral email messages last week when a University of Texas at Austin dean mistakenly sent a message that referred to a student as suffering from mental distress to the campus's 50,000 graduate students. Graduate School Dean Victoria Justice responded to an email message October 30th about a UT Austin student who had decided to withdraw from a graduate program, and instead of sending the message only to the Chancellor Brady Deaton, Justice used the reply all function and sent it to every UT Austin graduate student. The student who had withdrawn from the university originally addressed her message to the graduate student body. No students received her message, however, because she wasn't authorized to send a message to the entire list. Justice said in a follow-up explanation for the accidental reply all. The email included the former student's name and email address.
Yikes, sounds like there's more than one person suffering from mental distress now. Our second story comes from eschoolnews.com.
A high school student in Austin became homeless after her mom lost her job. She went from school to school in the Austin area, settled at the Youth Connection Charter School, YCCS, and managed to pass all her classes. During her senior year, and even though she managed to persevere through this perilous time, her school informed her that she did not have enough credits to graduate. All that was left was to give up. These unforeseen circumstances in her life shouldn't have counted against her since she tried really hard and made it through, but they did. Someone told her about the YCCS virtual program, and she decided to give her school one more try. She attended her YCCS virtual campus at a community college for 90% of the time and worked from home around 10% of the time, which helped with her extra responsibilities. This past summer, she graduated with honors and has been accepted to Trinity University with a full scholarship. The student had this to say, "I was shocked. Now I know I can do anything. I can go to college and make my dreams come true."
This story sounds too good to be true. Or is it? Our third story comes from eblog.com and shares enrollment statistics for online courses. Studies show that enrollment in online courses is growing. Data from the Smarter Measure, which identifies students' readiness for online learning, reveals that enrollment in online courses is increasing by nearly 20% each year. Furthermore, approximately 28% of online students are between the ages of 18 and 22. In a study that collected information of more than 200,000 students from more than 270 colleges and universities, researchers found that 72% of respondents were females. College officials say that both schools and their students benefit when a student's level of readiness for online learning is measured, because universities want to retain students through graduation. Meanwhile, individuals who are considering online courses want to know if this style of learning is conducive to their learning habits. Furthermore, 28% identified social as their main style of learning. The student readiness report is of substantial interest to distance learning leaders as they plan to continue to scale and improve their programs. 72% female, huh? Sounds like a target-rich environment, right, guys? Again, here are your choices for tonight, group. Choose the true story. From eCampus News, we have the reply all email. From Chronicle.com, we have a girl and a blended learning story. And finally, from eBlogged, we have online enrollment stats. Which of these is the real IT and education, or more specifically, which of these is the real story dealing with the power of the internet that can be helpful and harmful?
Well, I think we know that it's not the first one, because a similar thing happened in Missouri recently.
Right.
And that was not at the University of Texas.
The University of Texas people know better than to do that.
I would hope so.
They're too well trained.
And number two does seem really too good to be true.
Except I did see number two on the news.
It can be true.
I did. I saw it on the news. I saw her interview. And number three could be or could not be true because of the different statistics being used, because there are so many different articles about that on the source.
Yeah.
And the numbers could be right or they could be wrong, because I didn't commit all of the percentages to memory. Now, one of the things I have, and you might know that
I remember the part about it being social.
Yes.
Preferred social.
I do remember that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the second one then?
The news story.
You're sure she was from Austin?
The news story.
You're sure?
I am not sure about anything, but I didn't see a story like that.
About a girl from Austin. That would have been the memorable part.
Who was homeless. But I don't, the details, I don't know exactly which online university it was.
Well, sometimes too good to be true makes it true.
I say go for it.
Do you want to go for the good one?
Sure.
We can at least pretend to have a happy ending.
We go for the internet. Good for you.
Well, I'm sorry to say you are incorrect today. The true story was the eblog.com story about the statistics from Smarter Measure as a consortium that collects and reports on data regarding learning readiness. The study did include that nearly 210,000 students from 271 colleges, indeed that 28% of students online are between the ages of 18 and 22, and that 72% of those online students were female. Smarter Measure seeks to help universities assess students' levels of readiness when it comes to online instruction to facilitate student success. Well, sorry to say you weren't as successful, but you were successful as we were when we had our opportunity to be in the hot seat. So we wish you best of luck in your next quiz, and thank you for participating.
Thank you.
Yeah,
This is a production by the students enrolled in an instructional technology course called Teaching and Learning with the Internet, taught by me, Dr. Joan Hughes, at the University of Texas at Austin. In preparation for the live shows, students tracked several internet-based news sources for 2 weeks. The live show was recorded and produced in the fall of 2010.